Welcome to episode 40 of Good Timing. Is it episode 40? I think it's episode 40. Let's see. I literally look at my podcast app, look at my own. Yep, episode 40. It is. I realized it was episode 40 and I was like, wow, I better say something. And what I'm going to say is, if you think 40 is exciting, just wait till 50. That's going to be really crazy. Maybe I'll do something special for the 50th episode. Or maybe I'll just let it pass by, like most things in life. I didn't meditate today or play my viola or write in my journal or any of the good things I try to do each day. And that's okay, because sometimes you just have to skip a day to remind yourself that you're no better than anyone else. You know? Everyone's just oscillating between having their shit together and not. What makes me so special? You know? Nothing. None of us are special. Or all of us are special. Either one. But I find that if I'm beating myself up for not doing something, that's actually still my ego, even though it's negative. Like, I'm giving myself so much energy and attention. But if a friend told me they forgot to meditate today, I'd be like, so what? You'll do it tomorrow. Because that's the reasonable response. But we hold ourselves to these extremely high standards because we think we're special. But we're not. That sounds kind of negative, but it's not. Because even if we're not special, that doesn't mean we don't deserve love and to take care of ourselves and to be treated well by others. It just means we're not special. And it's a huge weight off when I can get into that zone of not feeling special and just existing. It's very freeing. Sometimes I can tap into that and sometimes not. And I don't know, today I was scattered and it was a busy day. I was editing this podcast episode and also editing this new video I put out called A Violist's Apology, which is now up on my YouTube and Instagram. So pick your poison. I'm pretty proud of it. The idea came when a Juilliard viola teacher reached out to me, who I knew from when I was at school, and he asked if I had seen Colbert's viola jokes he made to John Oliver recently. It's a little bit old news now, but I hadn't seen them, but I immediately looked it up. And the teacher also pointed out to me that I made a very similar joke last year on The Tonight Show to one of Colbert's jokes and asked if I could make some sort of video connecting the situation and bringing awareness to the American Viola Society and violists in general. So I wasn't sure if I was feeling like a funny idea with it, but then this idea came to me, which I won't explain. I'll just encourage you to watch the video. Again, it's called A Violist's Apology on YouTube or Instagram. I'll also encourage you to spread the word about this podcast. If you're enjoying it, tell a friend, share an episode you like on social media, rate, review, and subscribe. You know the drill. Okay, today's episode, really great episode. I have on stand-up comedian Erica Rhodes. She's so hilarious. She's one of my favorite comics to watch and such a pleasure to talk to. We talk about acting. She's also an actor. I pretend to know about acting, even though I've really only taken one acting class and it's on Zoom. I feel so embarrassed even saying it, but, you know, it's fun, okay? I'm not going to lie. It's a fun class on Zoom while we're all mostly indoors still, you know? And, like, the weird part is less the acting on Zoom and more the acting in your own home with someone else doing mundane tasks in the next room. Okay, well, you know, let's get to it. And if you want more Erica, she has a special coming out on April 13th on Comedy Dynamics. So keep an eye out for that. You can go to her website to get more info on everything she's up to. That's ericarhodescomedy.com. And now, without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Erica Rhodes. Well, Well, thanks for doing this. It's nice to kind of meet you officially over Zoom.
I think we met briefly in New York once at like a weird show.
Yeah, I couldn't remember the name of the bar, like if my life depended on it.
It was like some tiny, tiny place.
Yeah. And I think we both knew we both worked with like Tom and Bruce, and we were kind of like, hey, I kind of know like, of you.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I've like, I think when I was first starting out, I came across one of your videos online because I was just sort of like looking up like maybe Gotham live at Gotham videos and found a video of yours and was like, oh, she's really funny. And she's like a blonde girl. Cool.
Oh, that's, you know, funny. Yeah, man, I can't even watch that now. I'm like so embarrassed by my old stuff.
It's so painful to go back and watch old things. If it's before like 2 years ago, I don't dare look now.
No, I can't. And
I was going back through my old photos I used to have like really bad skin and I was trying to like freak my boyfriend out with an old photo. And then I found like this video of the very first time I did stand up and I had someone video it, which why did I do that? Right. But it sent me down like a really bad spiral watching that. Cause I was like, I can't believe anyone saw that.
No, I can't even listen to like my album. Like if I hear my album, my ears are like, ah, like I can't.
Do you I mean, we have to like, as comedians, you have to listen back to your set from like the night before, but
I have been really bad about that. Like, I think I need to like force myself because I keep recording it and then not listening.
Right. I mean, I do that too. And sometimes I'll like psych myself up and then listen to like five sets in a row from like a few nights before. I'm like, okay, I have to. But it's tough because that's like kind of, at least for me, part of the writing process is listening back. And since we're barely performing right now, I feel like we don't have that key writing. I can't just like write bits without going on stage. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how much you're performing in the pandemic or.
I have been still doing the road actually. Like I just did DC last weekend.
Oh, cool. How was it?
It's weird. I mean, it's definitely not normal audiences because, you know, they're spread out, they're smaller, everybody's a little bit nervous to laugh. Like I feel like even if they don't wear a mask, they like are scared to like, you know, laugh too hard. Yeah, they're scared, so they're kind of like politely laughing, so you're kind of, it's almost like you have to gauge on a scale, like if you get a chuckle, that's like a really good laugh, you know.
Right. Yeah. I've been doing some like outdoor stuff, and that's also like with the acoustics, you're just like, okay.
Oh, it's so hard.
If I hear anything.
I know. So are you doing outdoor shows in LA?
No, I was in New York. Okay. New York had a pretty hot outdoor scene going
on.
That's
ironic. I heard that like New York had all these outdoor shows in LA, like didn't really. And I was like, what's with that?
I know. It doesn't make any sense because you'd think LA was, it's the same thing with like LA didn't have any outdoor dining before the pandemic.
Yeah. I know, LA is just lazy, I think.
Yeah, I think because LA is like, we're outside all the time, so if we're going to go eat, we can just go inside, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's always, but I wanted to also talk to you because I know you used to play the cello, right?
Yeah, I have it right here.
Oh my God.
Hello, right here.
So you still like practice and play and everything?
Oh man, I haven't practiced in a long time, but.
Well, me neither, but.
Yeah, did you go to Juilliard? Did I read that?
Yeah, I went to Juilliard for viola and like I basically like make a living freelancing as a violist and then I'm trying to switch over to comedy more.
That's amazing. Like I come from like all music background. Like my mom's a violinist.
Oh, wow.
My aunt's a violist. And my
Your aunt's a violist.
Yeah. My other aunt was a violinist. They're all musicians.
Do they play in like orchestras or where do they play?
Yeah, my aunt was in the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra. And my other aunt plays in the opera in Minnesota. And my mom was in the Pops.
Oh, wow. And so was there pressure on you to follow in their footsteps?
A little bit, because I was a cello major in college for a year. I went to BU and I was a cello major.
Oh, wow.
But I was really bad at reading music.
Yeah, I'm the world's worst sight reader still.
Yeah, it's like I have a good ear, so I can pick it up like when I hear something. Yeah, I was like failing music theory at BU.
I think a lot of people go to music conservatories and get really put off by the whole thing because they're forced to take like theory and ear training and all of these things that you like. You're like, why do I need to know this? And I mean, in a certain way, you don't. I mean, I can tell you as like a working professional musician, like I don't use most of the stuff I learned in theory and ear training, but you know,
but you have to be able to read music pretty well to freelance, you know?
Yes. Yeah. I can like read down a chart or something, but there are definitely people who are way better at it than I am. But I don't know. When you started comedy, did you ever think about like combining the two? People always ask like, oh, do you play viola in your act? And it took me a while to ever even try that. Was it always separate?
People are always trying to get me to play. They think, you know, people are so fascinated by the cello. They think it's amazing. Like, you don't even have to play that well. They're just like, oh my God, you play the cello.
I know.
But for me, it's like a nightmare idea to mm-hmm. have to travel with my cello and like, or to become the cello girl or like have to depend on, because what I love about comedy is that it's just you. Like you don't have to depend on any, you don't need props. You don't need, you know, like other people. So I don't want to carry my cello around and become the cello comic.
Yeah. I mean, viola is way smaller and I even hate carrying my viola around and like, flying with it is a nightmare. I mean, cellists have to buy a whole other seat for their cello. Yeah. I like have all this anxiety boarding planes because I'm always worried they're going to make me check my viola because it like kind of doesn't fit in the overhead sometimes.
Yeah. And you don't want to have to check it because instruments are expensive.
But that was one of the things that drew me to stand up early on. I was like, oh, like with viola, I have to, you know, dress up and do all these things. Comedy, I can just like show up in a hoodie, even for like a big event.
I love that you can just be you. Like that's all you need. Just you. Like that's so cool.
I mean, I have worked viola into my act like more recently. I think I was really set on like being able to do them separately. Like I didn't want to lean on the viola.
Right.
But then one day I was like, okay, what if I just like play it a little bit and like juxtapose it? And I'm still like playing around with that, but I definitely also have that feeling of like stand-up is like pure stand-up is so beautiful and simple, and it's like you said, you can just be you.
And
so have you ever played cello while telling jokes? Have you always kept it separate?
I think I may have tried it once or twice in some very experimental format, like a really like weird show, but then it made it very clear that I didn't want to do that.
Yeah, right. Great. You're like, okay, now I know for sure that's a bad idea.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's always trying to get me to do it. And maybe like at some point if I ever like find a way where it makes sense, but I just haven't figured that out yet.
Yeah, I think it just has to feel like, because I always thought it would be so hacky, you know? Because it kind of is.
It's not hacky. No, I don't think it's hacky. I think it's just the way you do it, you know?
Right, right.
I think it's execution.
Were your family members sort of upset when you wanted to move away from cello and go more into comedy and acting?
I don't think my mom was ever upset. I think she understood. I think she's always been excited that, like, I've done any sort of performance. You know, and then comedy just seemed so left field. Like she was like, one time she said, I never thought that this is like the last thing I thought you would do. She goes, well, maybe hockey would be the actual.
Your mom's like a good writer. That is like a good other thing that you wouldn't do. Like
right. Hockey is the only other thing I definitely would not have done.
Right. Oh, that's so funny. Yeah, I feel like that's pretty common for people who are actually decent at stand-up. You wouldn't think that they would be good because those people who are like killing in conversation, usually they are actually like nightmares. And really
I know,
good on stage.
I always say that to people. Like normal comics are pretty serious people.
Right, right. Just like miserable, depressed.
Yeah, we're not like they're like, oh, comics, the life of the party. And it's actually the opposite. We're like, you know.
I feel like I've almost like leaned into that narrative now where I'll try to be like extra boring at parties and around people just to be like, I'm not performing here. I'm not going to be funny for you. I'm not.
Right. Yeah, I feel the same way. It's exhausting if you try to do that.
Yeah. And then I don't know how you feel about like comedian hangs where everyone's like kind of like roasting each other, but that's also like a nightmare for me. I can't be on like that all the time. But
yeah, I'm not that comfortable around that vibe either. I'm sort of an introvert. I don't know if you're like that, but I'm naturally a more of an introvert.
Yeah, I think I am an introvert. I also like, it depends who I'm around, you know, like yeah. I feel like that's the same with most people. Like at default, I'm probably an introvert, but also there are some times where I'm like, who am I? Like,
right.
You know, like I'm being like, I'm like killing right now with these rant. Like, I don't know why I just feel so comfortable with these five people I just met through my aunt at her, like whatever. I don't know. But how connected is music and comedy for you? Like, I always felt like comedy is very musical in terms of like waiting for the audience to laugh and kind of like riding the crowd in a sort of like chamber music type way.
Yeah, I think it is musical. They say a lot of comics have been musicians, and there probably really is a rhythm to it.
I don't know if you like feel this way, but when I started doing comedy, like I all of a sudden got way more motivated to like practice viola again because I liked doing something that was new and like getting better at a more of a beginner level. It's like more tangible. And then all of a sudden I had more faith in like playing viola again and like trusting a process of practicing.
Yeah, I should be that way, but I have not been that way.
No, you shouldn't be anything. I think it's great that you're like...
I'm like, I'm feeling really guilty. I haven't taken my cello out. That's right here.
No. I started playing viola again like 10 minutes a day recently, and that's made me feel really good about myself. Just wow. That.
Just taking it out of the case is a big deal to me.
That's the huge thing. I think if I just kept my viola out of the case, maybe I would practice more.
Yeah, I'm sure I would if I kept my cello out. I also have to get it adjusted because my bridge is all messed up. Like I've been meaning to get it adjusted for like months and months.
Oh, yeah. I am always, my luthier taught me how to move my bridge.
Yeah,
but I'm always terrifying. Really because if that thing falls over, like the whole thing, apparently
comes apart. I know my bridge is barely on the cello anymore. It's like sticking, like the bod, that feet are like sticking up, basically.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So that's scary to play it right now.
People have convinced me that like if my bridge falls over, the instrument will like explode. They're like, your yeah. sound post will fall over. There's
nothing, the whole thing like falls apart. It's all based on the bridge.
What a stupid instrument. What a dumb design, right?
I know. It's old school.
But I know you do a lot of acting as well as stand up. And did acting come first and then you started doing comedy or...
Yeah, I started as an actress and I wouldn't say I do a lot of it anymore, but I'll do it if it comes up.
Right. And what made you want to go from acting to stand up? What was like your first entrance into that?
Mostly the acting just wasn't taking off and it wasn't going anywhere. And I was getting more and more frustrated because I had no creative outlet. So I was like, you know, I was like, I can't just like depend on a 5-minute audition a week to like, you know, to express myself.
Right. Acting, much like classical music, you're kind of just like a glorified interpreter.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
It's like fun to be doing it in conjunction with creating things, you know, like if I was also writing my own music, I think I'd be more fine, like doing all these freelance gigs as a violist, because I'd have that outlet. But I never wanted to write my own music. For whatever reason.
Right. Yeah, some people are more creators. Like some people need to make stuff and some people are, as you said, they just want to express whatever the composer wrote or the writers wrote and they're really good at that. It's a different mindset.
It is. And I also think like within more creative people, like there's just different ways that you actually would be creative. Like if I didn't have comedy, I think I would just be like, I guess I don't like to make stuff because I hate writing music and I don't want to like paint anything or whatever. I guess I'm just like,
I'm terrible at visual art. I always envy people who are good at drawing.
Oh yeah.
I can't draw a stick figure to save my life.
Oh, I can't draw and I can't write. My handwriting is like a child.
Oh yeah. My writing's gotten really bad, but I still do it. I do like writing. I like handwriting stuff.
I feel like my handwriting is getting worse somehow. Like I've started writing more by hand and it's just, I don't know if it's like aging or whatever, but like, it's like scrawl. I can barely.
I know my signature is just like terrible.
I'm always worried that people are going to think like my signature is forged because it's completely different every time.
Well, maybe that's actually a cool thing to do, to like purposely make it different every time. Then it might be worth more in the long run.
Right, because they're like, her signature looks too similar to the one before. And we know Isabel's signature likes to permutate.
Yeah. Although then if you're ever depositing checks that way, you might get in trouble.
But it just shows that, like, who's checking? Because literally, no, like, my signature is completely different on, like, two different checks I'm depositing and no one notices. So who's really looking?
Anyone's looking. You can sign however you want on a check.
I guess it's only if they like went back, if you like maybe killed someone and they're like, well, let's look at her checks and see if she, you know, but
are you acting at all or no?
I mean, I never thought of myself as pursuing acting. It's kind of the thing where when you start doing stand up, you get people are like, do you act? And you're like, I could. Maybe.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, when you do stand up and you're telling the same joke every night as if it's the first time you're telling it, you are acting.
Yeah.
So I think most stand-ups are like decent actors as long as they're playing like themselves. I don't know. It seems, I don't want to like insult actors and make it seem like this easy thing, but maybe it's kind of easy.
That's what I've always thought. But then you see bad acting and you're like, oh no, it's not.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I'll think I'm like killing it acting. I'll like make some self tape and be like, that seems really convincing. And then I'll help my actual actor friend make a self tape. And I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
You just made like a whole story for me. Like I just saw everything. How did you do that?
Yeah.
It's like this very elusive art form, it seems. But you actually studied acting, right? Like you went to...
Yeah, I went to a conservatory. I went to the Atlantic Theater Conservatory, which is like sort of a part of NYU, but I didn't do the NYU program. I did the just like 2.5-year program.
Okay. And how did you feel about doing that? Like, do you feel like it was worth it looking back?
Yeah, I actually loved it. I loved the whole experience. It was like David Mamet and William H. Macy's acting style. And
oh, wow.
David Mamet's style is just like, just say the words. Just say the he's not into method or like getting in touch with like your past and stuff. He's into like, just stand there and say the words.
So. Yeah. I'm doing this kind of embarrassing thing right now where I'm taking an acting class on Zoom because I have nothing going on.
Right. Is that fun? Is it fun?
It's really fun, but I think the school of acting is maybe similar to what you were talking about. Cause like we're just like reading through these scenes and she's basically just being like, say it how you would say it completely. Right. Don't try to be anything. And I understand that to a certain point, like you want to seem natural, but it's also like, well, what if the character is like completely different from who I like? Where's the line in terms of like changing yourself?
I know. I feel like a lot of acting has become like just being you, but within the within this structure. So like, that's like not method act. Method actors would become the person,
right? So I guess unless it's method acting, then you're just being you, and if you're not the character, they just wouldn't. Yeah, I guess it's similar because sometimes people are like, oh, like playing music, you can like really express yourself. And it's like, well, if I'm playing a piece that's like happy, but I'm sad, I'm not gonna like play the piece sad,
right?
Like, just because I'm feeling a certain way, I'm gonna like try to play what the composer wanted,
right?
And that it sort of reminds me of that in terms of like, how much are we supposed to adjust? And then like, does that even work in terms of that kind of authenticity?
Do you know what style of acting it is, or did they not specify what it is?
I don't even think they specified. It's the Barrow School, but I don't know. It shows you how much I'm paying attention, but
you should read, I think it's David Mamet's book about called True or False. I think it's a really helpful acting book.
Oh, cool. I will read it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause it's the thing where I'll do self tapes now. And it's sort of like, I just have no idea if it's like, okay, or what I'm doing. And so I was like, well, let me just take a beginner class and see what beginners learn.
Right.
And see if that helps me at all. Cause why not? You know?
I think acting's fun. I think when it's fun, it's easy, but, I don't like the overthinking techniques. I don't like the method really where they're really feel what it felt like when you were five and blah, blah, you know, I don't really like that technique.
So is that technique, if I were to guess how that works, is it you have a bunch of memories in your arsenal that make you do certain things? Like if you need to cry, you think about the time that this happened
Yeah, I think that's what it is. You conjure up the emotion you've had in the past, you know? But to me, it takes you out of the moment. It takes you out of working with the moment.
Right.
I like the moment acting. I like where it's just be present in what's happening now. And if you have a natural reaction that's emotional, it comes from what's happening, not something in the past that takes you out of the scene that brings you to your childhood.
Right. If you're in a scene where you're getting broken up with and you're supposed to cry and you're hold on, I have to think about this time when I didn't get the toy I wanted for Christmas.
It didn't work. I think that works for some people, but that didn't work for me.
Do you think it was, I feel I don't have enough childhood memories that conjure up intense emotion. I don't know. I feel I had a really boring childhood.
I'm sure you have them, but it's they have all these weird ways of getting there. You have to remember the smell of the room and it's sense memory. So it's I'm sure you have, we all have something.
Right. Yeah. I'm sure I'm just completely, it's just completely repressed. That's probably terrible.
Well, comics, that's the problem with comics is I think for us, it's a little harder sometimes to conjure up those emotions because the whole reason we're in comedy is to deflect those emotions. You know,
right.
we do that. So we're because I find crying on cue so difficult. And I think it's because I use comedy to deflect uncomfortable emotions.
Right. Maybe that's why sometimes you see a comedian all of a sudden play their big breakout dramatic role in a movie.
Yeah, I'm always comes out.
Yeah, and I'm I feel I shouldn't be seeing this right now.
Because they are really dark people. And so if they actually can show that, then it's
right.
Shocking.
Yeah, I don't know. It's this should have been I feel I'm in their therapy session right now and they're finally, do you deal with, performance anxiety or have you, is that something that affects you?
It's weird. I get anxiety, but I think it depends on what the show is, you know, if it's something that feels high pressure, but I have been noticing on the road lately when more and more time goes by in between sets, I'm I don't know how to do this. How do I do this?
Yeah, it's stand-up is I can go a week without playing viola and be I still feel I know how to play because it's so much muscle memory. But if I go 2 days or before the pandemic, if I went a couple days without telling jokes, I thought I lost it all.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I feel it's very similar to music in that you just have to, you have to take out your instrument every day or you forget how to do it.
Yeah, well, do you feel now that you have forgotten or is that more just an anxious feeling?
It's just the anxious feeling. As soon as I get on stage, I remember. But right before I'm what am I doing?
Right. The certain motions of grabbing the microphone out of the stand, you're kind of okay, I know how to do this now.
I do notice that I go on with too much energy now up top when there's been too much time, you know, because we're so casual about when we've been doing 5 sets a week, you walk on stage like I've been doing five sets a week. Like, you don't walk on stage like, I'm performing. Like, oh my God. You know?
I know. There is that like cool, I'm in control thing that like we've all probably lost for a little while.
Now it's like I go up like way too excited to be there, you know?
Right. The audience is like... What's happening?
Like, yeah, they're just kind of, well, I always feel like that's like, that does make me feel more amateur. Like the more excited I am in the beginning, the more amateur I feel, like, cause I'm supposed to just be like, hey guys, you know,
right. Right. Did you deal with more nerves when you played cello, or was the anxiety different, or is it pretty similar in terms of just if it was a high stakes situation?
Man, it's been so long since I've performed with cello that I don't remember what that, I don't, honestly, I can't remember.
Maybe you didn't have that much anxiety if you don't remember. Maybe it was just kind of like uneventful.
No, I just don't think I was in that many. I do remember having anxiety, like when I had like my high school senior performance where it was just me and a piano and I had all, you know, like a lot of pieces to learn. And you know, that was and they were difficult. But that's the last time I like performed alone, really.
It seems like you have a very like healthy relationship to performance anxiety, where like if it's something where like you would get nervous, you do. And if it's like a regular whatever show, you're kind of like, it's fine. I feel like for me, it's like I never know when it's going to happen.
Really? You could get it at anything.
Yeah, like I'll be at like an open mic, like shaking, and then I'll have like some big showcase and I'll be like, I feel fine right now. Like it's not that, you know, it's sometimes if it's like a big thing, I'll get nervous, but I never know when it's really going to strike for me.
That's interesting. I'm trying to think if I've had it when it's just, I think I might have a little bit of that where it's a little unpredictable. But yeah, on the road, I don't think I get super anxious on the road.
Do you find that, like, do you miss stand-up not doing it as much?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really grateful that I'm still able to do it now, because yeah, most people seem to not have been doing it. So every time I'm really grateful. And then yeah, what I miss is trying new stuff out, because it's like, you know, you can try stuff on Zoom shows, but you can't really gauge if it's going to work on stage. And then I have all these new things that are like started, but then I'm too scared to try them on the road because I'm like, well, now I'm out of shape again. And now I don't know if it's going to work and blah, 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 blah. So like, that's what I really miss.
Yeah, for me, like if you're performing like once a week or once every 2 weeks, you're like, well, I don't want to like do new stuff and like potentially have it bomb for this like one opportunity.
I know, that's the problem, is then the pressure, you have more pressure on each set and you're like, when am I going to try new stuff?
Yeah. I feel like when things just start like getting back to normal, I'm just going to have to go on stage with like a scroll of like all my half premises that I've been jotting down.
I know. I'll start things on the road. Like I'll be like, okay, there's a premise and I'll start it. And then I'll try to like find the punchline, but sometimes it just like doesn't work. And then I'm like, yep. And you know, then I have to be like, yep, I haven't been doing this that much. You
know? Yeah. How long did you go from like the start of the shutdown to your first show back?
Oh, I did a lot of Zoom shows in the beginning. And then, okay. So the first real show, I think maybe 2 months.
Okay.
2 months went by.
I think I went from March till July before I was doing like Zoom shows, but
right.
I did like I had finally like a show in Central Park. I also think like New York, it took till like the summer till they did those outdoor shows, or I just wasn't aware of them and they were like secret, but
that's great that like, they did those though, you know, cause then at least you could try stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, I didn't want to like, I did like one new joke towards the beginning and it just totally bombed. And then I was just like, I just want to do stuff that I know is going to work, cause I don't know when I'm going to do this again. And
that's the problem. I know I did like a special and I hadn't even tried some of those jokes like, you know, that long.
Was that the Dry Bar comedy?
No, that was a drive-in. I did a drive-in special at the Rose Bowl.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because I was supposed to do it through Tribeca. I was supposed to do it in April as part of the Tribeca Film Festival. And then they switched it to like a drive-in so that we could still do it. But it was like, A, it was my first time doing a drive-in, and B, it was like I hadn't been doing a lot of those jokes yet. So
I haven't done a drive-in show yet. Do they really just like honk to laugh? Is that what?
They did a little bit, yeah, but not the one. There's one in LA that I've done with Tammy, Joe Dearden, and
oh yeah,
that one is they just have clappers.
What are clappers? Oh, like
they put them outside the window and they're like clapping. They're like these clapping clappers. Nobody honks though, so it's kind of like very civilized.
Right, that's so weird. It's like a golf tournament almost.
Yeah, it's very like polite, like blah 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 blah.
At a certain point, they should just have like a laugh track that they can like pump. I don't know.
That would be really weird to have a laugh track. Like you get the same amount of laughs on each joke.
Yeah, I don't know why I haven't done this yet, but I've thought of like getting a laugh track on my phone and just like telling jokes and pressing the button just to like
that see would, if it. Yeah, I think I've seen videos like that look like that on like TikTok or whatever.
Where oh, yeah.
Are you doing a laugh track and you're like, this is weird.
Are you on TikTok?
I am, but I never go on there and I hate it so much.
I'm scared of it. I'm not on it.
I hate it. I just hate it.
What do you hate about it?
I just think it's so dumb, the like lip syncing, like dancing thing. I don't get it. It feels really like shallow to me.
It's super shallow. It also makes me think like, am I just too old for it? Like,
too old for it for sure.
But I also think it just doesn't really make sense. Like who thought of this and how did they think of it?
Right.
You know, like there's no real like hook for it. It's just like people kind of put videos up and then you can like copy the video.
I know it feels very like not original. Like it feels like, oh, like how to be original without being original at all. Like how to like steal someone's song and then make it your own somehow.
It's like the ultimate kind of, if you're not really a creative person, but you want to like feel like you're creative.
Yes, exactly. That's what it feels like. It feels kind of like, yeah, it feels kind of like, oh, anyone can do this now.
I don't know how I'd feel also if I put like a video of my stand-up and then someone like lip synced to the audio. Like, I don't know if I would like that. Have you had that happen to you?
No, I don't think so.
I feel like I'd be like, stop. Like... Don't try to be me. I don't know. But maybe people are flattered by that if their audio is stolen. Because like then your audio goes viral or something.
Oh, maybe. I liked that business. Did you see that business video? I don't think it was TikTok. It was just like a video where the girl was explaining stocks, like how stocks work from a normal perspective.
Did you? Oh, no, I haven't seen that.
That one went viral and I liked it because the girl was just like being herself and it was really authentic and like very funny and real. And that's the kind of I don't mind a video that goes viral if there's like something to it.
Right. It's just, but it's all these people. I mean, like part of me likes to think of it as like this beautiful, like communal sharing of expression. Like I'm going to do a dance and like now you do the dance. And like, we're all like passing around this shared art, but I don't know. Yeah. It also just seems like the end of everything.
I like some videos. Like I like, who is it? A comic. I'm blanking on her name.
Esther Pavitsky.
And she does the video where her boyfriend's in the background, like just ignoring her. And she's really into the dancing. And to me, that's funny because it's like, it's a way to like do it tongue in cheek, you know, like she's not taking it seriously.
Yeah. I don't know. I go back and forth every day thinking like I should just delete all my social media and like if I'm good enough, like it'll happen eventually. And then the next day I'm like, how do I get 10 more followers today? Like, what do I do?
In the same way, it's like a love-hate battle and you just like don't know how to win. You know, you're like, I can't win this battle.
Yeah, I think it's because like ultimately, no matter what, like we're still left with like that emptiness that it just feels like to be a human. So it's
yeah,
like
that too.
Even if like you get your life like quote perfect where you're like not doing anything that's bad for your brain and you have all this time to like devote to whatever meaningful projects you have, you're still like, okay, well now I'm like bored and I have all this time that I have to fill.
I know. Yeah. There is no winning.
I feel like just accepting that there's no winning and just kind of being like, well, if I want to be on Instagram today, I'm going to be on Instagram.
Yeah, because if you start making rules for your brain, then the brain rebels in its own way. Like if you're like, I can only spend an hour on here a day, then your brain's like, I can't stop doing it, you know? So like addictive patterns, you have to almost outsmart too. You have to be like, I can't make those rules because then I'm going to just want to break the rules.
I guess it's kind of like I've heard someone say like, if you want to eat healthier, like don't stop eating foods that are bad for you. Just like try to eat a lot of foods that are good for you instead. So it's like, instead of thinking like, don't go on Instagram, like just try to read like a book in addition.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But it takes me like forever to get through one book. So
I know me.
I don't know.
Well, it depends if the book's good, I guess.
Yeah. Wait, are you reading anything good right now?
I'm reading this book, which I'm a little torn about. It's called Untamed, and it's pretty good. There's just like, there were a couple chapters that felt a little lectury to me, a little bit like soapboxy.
Oh yeah. What's the book about?
It's nonfiction. It's like about finding herself, finding her real, like authentic self and, you know, like living true to herself basically, which I think there are a lot of really good messages, and there were a couple chapters that like really like I found very moving and really, really good. And then there were a couple chapters where I was like, oh, like, you know, okay, we're going to be lectured in this chapter a bit.
Right, right. Yeah, I can only read nonfiction now for some reason.
I've been leaning towards nonfiction too. I don't know. I can't explain why either.
I kind of get like addicted to like, so, not like actual self-help books, but self, you know, just it feels like, okay, I'm like doing I'm reading about a thing that I'm then gonna like do. And
right. What's the last book you read?
I'm in the middle of The Shallows by Nicholas Carr. It's like what the internet is doing to our brains. So I'm like all into this, like,
that's why
internet.
You're thinking like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But in a way it's like, I'm becoming like radicalized, like against the internet. And
right.
I'm just going to go back the other way eventually because I'm like depriving myself of certain stimuli. And then, I don't know, again, it's just like, wait, who is that book?
Oh, sorry. This book's by Glennon Doyle.
Okay. Sorry. What were you asking? Am I taking what?
I was just saying, are you taking a break from the internet then? Or what are you?
No, I just took social media off my phone. So I like check it on my web browser. But then it's like I'll be on my computer and I just like obsessively refresh my Twitter homepage instead.
I took Twitter off my phone and then I ended up still searching it on the browser on my phone. So I was like, this is so stupid.
I know. I will put like Safari in a folder on the last page of my phone and like sign out of Twitter, and I will still swipe all the way back and sign into Twitter on my phone.
Exactly. It's an addiction. It's like you can't help it.
I know. And everyone else is on it around you. So it's like if you're not on it, you kind of have to adopt this like on your high horse mentality in a little bit of a way.
Because you're
just like, well, everyone's on it except me. So I guess I'm like different and special.
The one thing that's interesting is that if you go off of it, nobody notices.
That's true. It's a really great way to realize. Like,
to realize how little effect you're actually having. Like, go off for a week, no one cares. No one's like, oh, I was worried about you, or you haven't updated anything. It's like nobody's noticing.
Yeah, and that's why it's so funny when people write these little like goodbye messages, like taking some time away. You're like, okay, like I'll see you in a week.
Nobody's worried.
Yeah, that's so funny. Yeah, there's really, I mean, it's just, there's no winning. But maybe it's all winning. I don't know. I'm trying to stay positive.
I think it is about finding things that you actually like to do, because like, I feel like when you're doing things that you feel pressured to do because you're trying to make headway in your career, like if you do TikTok because everyone's like, you should do TikTok, or you should do this because everyone says it, then you're not doing it like for the right reasons at all.
Right. And I mean, in a sense, we are so pressured into being on it. Like everyone kind of feels like you have to be on it.
Right. But so just focus on the things you actually enjoy doing. Like if you enjoy the podcast, then do the podcast. If you enjoy writing jokes, write jokes. Then I think you feel more like you're being more authentic with like what your path is rather than just what you're supposed to be doing all the time.
Right. And then if you do tweet or whatever, it like has less significance because you're like, well, I'm doing all these other things I like doing. So
yeah, then it's, yeah, I think it's about doing what you like doing. So if you don't like TikTok, just don't do TikTok, whatever.
Right. And nobody cares.
But nobody cares. So like people are going to pressure you because like that's what people do. They're always going to think like I have to tell other people what they're supposed to do with their career.
Yeah. And also people love to recommend stuff because it's like a great conversation starter. Like, I don't know. Sometimes it's literally they didn't know what to say. So they're just like, oh, you should try this thing. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, that is. Yeah. I think that happens a lot where people feel like they don't know what to say. So like, oh, you know what you should do?
Yeah, right.
You should do.
And then the person's like, I guess I have to like do that thing now. And the other person literally couldn't care if you actually do it or yeah, not.
Watch your video after they tell you to do it.
Right. They're not going to check in. Well, Erica, it's been so nice talking to you.
Yeah,
we're
you
coming
too.
towards the end of the podcast, but I like to just sometimes ask, do you have any final parting words of wisdom for anyone?
I would say that like a lot of artists, it feels like they're using the pandemic now as an excuse to not do anything. Like they're like, well, I would do this if it weren't for the pandemic, or I would do this if the, and I think there's always going to be something like that. There's always going to be a reason to not do things, you know? And so I would challenge people to be like, you know what? I'm going to still find a way to do a show. I'm still going to find a way to keep writing. I'm still going to find a way to like keep going. Cause if you take off the entire year, I mean, it could be another year. It's like, then right. Okay, you might as well just quit.
Right. We're all kind of like waiting for our lives to start again.
Yeah. And I think that's a mistake. I think people who want to create will keep creating anyway.
Right. And to jump on that also, if you like aren't finding like you want to do something because of the pandemic, maybe it's because you don't want to do it ever.
Well, exactly. Yes. Like if you really don't want to do stand-up, I mean, there are ways to still do stand-up. Like you said, there are outdoor shows in New York. There are Zoom shows. There are like you can create a show. There are ways to keep doing it if you really want to. And if you really don't want to, there's always a reason to not do it.
Yeah, without a pandemic, yeah, there are many reasons.
Yeah, but
yeah, like
maybe you're right. Maybe a lot of people are realizing I don't really want to do this.
Right, which that's not a bad thing.
No, let's hope a lot of people quit. You know? That's better for all of us.
It is. Well, it's been really nice talking to you, Erica.
Yeah,
and
cool. I hope you have a good time in LA.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. For more, you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter, both at @IsabelHagen_, and sign up for my mailing list at isabelhagen.com. And as always, please rate and review the podcast. Thank you so much, and take care.